Hi, my name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Polly.
And I just thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to be here this weekend. This is fabulous. And Laura called me sometime, I can't remember when, it's been probably 8 or 9 months ago, and she said, asked if I would come up and do a retreat. And I said, but Laura, I've never done a retreat. And she says, oh, that's all right, it's really loose, everybody will love you, and it'll be fine. And so weekend before last, in the meantime, you know, God works in mysterious ways, I got invited to do another retreat. So 2 weeks ago in South Carolina, I did a retreat, so you guys don't have to be first. I've done it one other time. And one of the things after we went through all that and the talking, my name is Polly, just like the parrot. So needless to say, you know, it's Polly wants a cracker and all that. I've been through all that. But thank you. I have a beautiful bouquet of flowers in my room. And I just opened the package that was there, and it's a gorgeous heart that's a jewelry box, and I got a cup. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the warm welcome. And my girlfriend Julie came down from Vancouver, Washington, and so we've accommodated her so we can stay in the same room together. So we've been best friends for a long time, and she abandoned me and and moved to Washington. So we get to see each other occasionally. I guess I just want to tell you a little bit of how I feel. I feel inadequate. I feel intimidated because I haven't, like I said, I just did this workshop one other time. And so what we're going to do tonight, she said, well, just do it however you want to. Well, I didn't know how to do it. I mean, there wasn't even do it however you want to. I didn't even know what I wanted to do. You know, kind of one of those things. So when I did it in South Carolina, what I did on Friday night is I just told my AA story. So you'll know a little bit about me and know what, you know, what I'm about and where I'm coming from and how I feel about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And also, I love it because this is woman to woman. And I would also like to share that when I am in a meeting of alcoholic women and Al-Anon women, I like to say, my name is Polly and I'm a double winner, because I am also a member of Al-Anon. And I feel like to be a member of any fellowship that I need to go to meetings and I need to have a sponsor. And I do that in both fellowships. So I am very grateful when I get to do both, you know, when it's AA and Al-Anon women. I think that's even, you know, that makes it real special. I've also had some problems with my throat. So pardon the clearing. Me and Bill Clinton, you know, we talk too much. I have a friend in Minnesota, and he tells me, he says, Polly, it's God's way of telling you to shut up. So anyway, I hope it doesn't drive anybody crazy that I've got this stuff going on with my throat. You know, maybe, Julie, if you got me a glass of water, that would be great. So anyway, if that's okay with you guys, that's what we're going to do. And the theme is living in the here and now is what Laura told me the theme was going to be. And so what I'm going to do about living in the here and now is I'm going to just share some of the things over the weekend in a workshop-like fashion. And I'm selfish. I don't want to break down in small groups, because if we break down, you can do that if you want to, but when I'm on, I don't want to do that because I'm selfish. I want to interact with everybody, and you can't do that. And I just, you know, Laura said that it's real loose and we can just do whatever we want to, so please speak up, you know, when we do the workshops, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to share some stuff about how I work some steps and focusing primarily on 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and because I feel like those are the into action steps, and kind of focus on those, and I'll go through some of the things that I do. I'm also, one of the things I read in Language of the Heart was Bill W.'s last letter, and he talks about emotional sobriety, our next frontier. And I think that we hear a lot of words around the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they take a lot of offense to them. You know, there's words being flown around like dysfunctional families and codependency, and, you know, they're just, people always have to, you know, start doing some, you know, cute little remarks like, I am a dysfunctional person from a functional family, and, you know, all of this stuff that everybody does. But the thing that I'd like to say is that I think that those are just words. And what Bill W. was talking about was emotional sobriety. And I think when it comes down to it, that's what we're talking about, is emotional sobriety. And so that's what I'd like to do some workshops on that. And then I'd like to do some writing, because I believe that the book talks a lot about writing. And I've been called around my group a step Nazi. I consider that a compliment. Yes, I do believe in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I will try to stick to is stuff that is conference-approved literature, because this is an AA and Al-Anon function. And one of the things, if I don't say it's in the big book, it's my opinion. And one of the things that I think is very true with most alcoholics, and I would say even especially alcoholic women, is that I'm very opinionated. So I come here with a lot of opinions. And if it's not in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, then that's all it is my opinion. Or it may be my own personal experience, strength, and hope that I'm going to share with you. But I just consider it a privilege to be here. I feel very blessed in that I'm one of the women, and I'm sure that there are others, that came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't have problems with women, because I'm a military wife. And I learned a long time ago that women were who were going to save your bacon. You know, when I was very young, we helped each other have babies, and men were never around. Men were there to make babies, not take care of babies. And so we learned to work with each other. And so when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was real clear where the answers were. And the answers were with women. And that hasn't changed since I've been in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I absolutely love working with women. And I love being sponsored, and I love sponsoring. So, and a lot of what you guys are going to hear this weekend are things that I have gotten, materials that I have gotten from my AA sponsor and my Al-Anon sponsor. So I'm just real happy to share Ellen and Sally with you this weekend, because they are the ones that have provided me with material that I'm going to talk about. So I'm going to tell a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like today. I grew up an only child of Southern Baptist faith. So I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous with a lot of old ideas about God. And I'd like to share those old ideas with you. My perception of God today does not even resemble the perception I have of God. The perception I had when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is nothing like what I have today. And I had this God that was punishing. I can still remember my mother saying things like, "We live in a God-fearing home." Well, today I live in a God-loving home. And my perception of God was that God was going to punish you. I even believed that God did bad things to other people because of what I did. And somehow or another, I got this idea. And what I want to talk a lot about this weekend is my perception. One of the things that I truly believe is that alcoholism is a disease of perception. And Clancy has a tape out called Alcoholism, A Disease of Perception. And I don't know if Terry has that tape, but I can certainly see to it that he gets it, if you would like to have that, because I believe that that is one of the best tapes describing the disease of alcoholism I have ever heard. And I identify with that, because I don't even know what they told me in that Baptist church. I am just here to report to you what I heard. And today I know that I have a disease of perception and that my perception of reality is distorted. And I can still remember my mother saying things to me like, Polly, wherever did you get those ideas? Nobody said that to you. But I could have sworn they said that to me because it was my perception. So what I report to you is my perception, and it's the truth as I understand it. And it may not have even been the truth. It may not have ever even been said to me. And I know today that I have to keep coming to rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because it's you that keep me in touch with reality. Because without you, I have no perception of reality. Because I have this kind of head that you give me a set of information, it takes a walk through my head, and what comes out usually doesn't even resemble what went in. That is the kind of head that I have. I just can't see. Julie and I were just talking earlier about a perception, and her perception of something that was going on, and my perception, her perception is the same as mine, but it wasn't at the time. And it's how we perceive things. And we can see things, and something can be happening, and we don't see the way it's really happening. And that's my head. That's the way I am. And so what I'm reporting to you is my perception. And I perceived these ministers standing up at the podium, getting beet red. Their faces were blood red. Their veins were sticking out. They were slamming on the podium, screaming their lungs out, scaring the bejesus out of you. And they were leaning into the congregation saying things like, if you've thought it, you've done it. And I don't know about any of you, but I was an alcoholic in the making, and I thought a lot. So I began to take on this attitude of what's the use? It doesn't matter what I do. I'm doomed anyway. And that's the feelings that I brought into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believed that God was going to punish you for your thoughts, for your actions, for everything. And God was not something that I didn't feel a loving feeling for. I didn't even have any idea what they talked about when they would say Jesus loves you. I would hear God and what was and I was just terrified. And I can remember being about 9 years old, sitting on a pew in church and thinking, gosh, I'm so little. How did I get so bad so fast? Because that's the way I felt about God. And I came to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And you introduced me to this loving, caring God. And I'm here to report to you tonight that God, as I understand Him, absolutely loves me to pieces. And He will, and He's always with me. And I know today that I do not walk alone. And I just want to share that journey with you because that's the best thing that has happened to me. Because I know today that no matter what, everything's going to be okay. That no matter what. And it's my perception. I always perceived that things were negative. But today I know that that was just my perception because there are no negatives in God's world. It's just my perception that's negative. I know today that everything works out for good. And I didn't know that when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I also have a higher power who's got a dynamite sense of humor. And my name is Polly. It's not Pauline or Paula. It's Polly. And if you're a little girl and your name is Polly, it's going to be things like Polly wants a cracker and Polly Wally Doodle all the day. And I don't know about any of you ladies, but I'm sensitive. And I certainly was sensitive when I was a little girl. And I didn't like to be teased and I didn't like to be laughed at. And you know, have you ever gone to a playground? I know Janet's a school teacher and probably some other people are school teachers. But have you ever gone out on a playground and you've seen a group of kids and they're teasing this other little kid and the more they tease the little kid, the more the little kid cries, and the more the little kid cries, the more they tease. I was always that other little kid that other kids teased. I couldn't stand to be laughed at and I couldn't stand to be teased. And the more they would do it, the more I would react. And I had zits all over my face, so it was pizza face and pus face, and none of that does a lot for your self-worth. And I know today that there's no negatives in God's world. And today, I love having the name Polly, because I can go into rooms with thousands of people, and most of the time when somebody says Polly, I'm pretty sure they're talking to me. There are not very many Pollys in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know I had a disease called alcoholism. I knew that I was a drunk, and I knew that I was a lush. And I used to drive down the freeways of Dallas, Texas, and I used to pray to God to have heart disease or cancer or something, because I knew that I was dying, and I just wanted to die of something respectable. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift, because if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, I wouldn't qualify for the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything I am or hope to be, I owe to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. 12 years ago, this past Tuesday, I married Dave. No, it wasn't this past Tuesday. It was the 27th. It was Tuesday before last. I married Dave, and Dave's last name is Pistol, so my name is now Polly Pistol. And I'm here to tell you that you're not going to walk around on planet Earth with a name like Polly Pistol and not learn to lighten up. So I've learned to be teased, and I've learned to be laughed at. And I think it's great. And I think God has a dynamite sense of humor. And he uses that sense of humor on me just a whole lot. And sometimes I have a hard time seeing it because I tend to be one of these kind of uptight, very serious people. And sometimes it's really hard for me to lighten up. And that, I guess if there's anything I love most about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is that you have taught me to laugh. And laugh at myself. And today, one of the things that, you know, I brought to the program is all this perfectionism that we all seem to have. And I love this because not too long ago I heard a guy say, talking about making mistakes, and he said, if you didn't make a bunch of mistakes today, you're not doing enough. And I feel that way today. That's, you know, and I used to be terrified to make a mistake. And today I know, gosh, if I don't make some mistakes today, I'm not doing enough. So that felt really good to me. I am also living, breathing proof that you can come to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and not come from alcoholic parents. I do not come from the disease of alcoholism. And when I came to this program, most people did have, their parents were alcoholic. And what I was told to do when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous was to identify with the feelings. Now, when it comes to what we've done in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, we've done a lot of different things. My best girlfriend, Julie, and I, we did not drink alike at all. I was a boring, lay-on-the-sofa alcoholic. I'll assure you, Julie was not that kind of alcoholic. And if we were going to compare our drinking stories, we would have nothing to talk about. But when I came to this program, they said, identify with the feelings. Because that is the thing that makes us alike, is the feelings. How we felt about our drinking is the things that make us alike. Because I have found out that I felt the same as women who have gone to jail, women who have had all kinds of, had their children taken from them. I felt the same way they felt. Because once we began to talk about the feelings, we may have drank differently, but I felt the same way. So I began to identify with the feelings, because the way we drink are the things that separate us. How we felt about our drinking is what brings us together. And the common solution. We've got a problem, and we have a common solution. And I began to identify with the feelings, and when you would talk about your alcoholic mom or your alcoholic dad, I could identify, because you see, my dad was just like your dad. My dad was very angry, and he would have fits of rage, just like a periodic alcoholic. And you never, ever knew when daddy was going to have one of his fits, as my mother used to say. And when daddy would have one of his fits, furniture would fly, and he'd curse and yell, and he'd knock my mom around. And I always thought it had something to do with me. Had I just done better or been better, then daddy wouldn't have had one of his fits. And I used to say the same things about my dad as I've heard you say about your alcoholic dad. And I'd say, there's no way I'll ever be like you. And the irony of it was, I became just like him. And I would look at my mom and I'd say, you're such a wimp. You don't stand up for yourself. How can you let him treat you like that? And I'd swear there's no way I'd ever be like her. But what happened to me was, is I became the worst of both my parents. These were good people. But what I hung on to was the negative. And I love when I was growing up, they had a song, and it was called Accentuate the Positive, Eliminate the Negative. I am just one of these people that it just accentuates the negative and eliminates the positive. We were getting honest about something in a meeting, and I had to think about this. Now, if we're sitting in a room, and say I've got on my red shirt here that says the Hard Rock Cafe, and 50 of you say, geez, that's a great shirt, and one person comes up to me and tells me they don't like this shirt, I'll never wear it again. It's just, that's the way my head works. I just eliminate the positive and hang on to the negative. And I have learned that about me. And today, I'm better. But see, I'm one of these people that doesn't, you know, that's just not in touch with reality. See, the reality is you can't, you know, all of the people all the time are not going to love you, Polly. But see, I'm going to work at that. You know, if everybody in the room loves me, but one person, I'll spend the whole weekend on that person, just trying to convince you what a great person I am. It's just, this is the kind of head I have. And I'm better today than I've ever been about being able to let that go. But that's the way it used to be. If there was any negative around, I just went and chased it down. I couldn't hang on to the positive, which, I mean, outweighed the negative a million times. But I couldn't hang on to that. It just seemed like I hung on to the negative. And I began to see that's what I did from a little child, because that's what I did with my parents. I had very, very loving parents. There's no child that could have been loved more than me. And if there was any child abuse done to me, the child abuse was I was just loved too much. Because my parents adored me, but I never, ever could feel it. And I also know because of that, that the disease I have is spiritual in nature. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about that. It talks about that we suffer from a spiritual malady. And it talks about that we're cut off from the sunshine of the Spirit. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about that where the Spirit is ill, there's no way that anything is enough. So there's no way that God, that my parents could have loved me enough, could have done enough, could have given me enough. And I know today it was because of the illness of spirit that kept me from feeling these people's love. And today I am so grateful that I know that that was not the truth. And I'm not here to tell you that I came from real well parents, because I didn't. But what I came from was parents who loved me. And that's what I never, ever could feel. And what happened to me was, is I became the worst of both my parents because of the things that I hung on to. And I know today that that is the disease of alcoholism. When I was 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer, and I just knew that I had found my knight in shining armor, and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. And I had married a SAC pilot, and this man was going to be gone for years at a time. And I was going to have to learn to take care of myself. And I have never, ever wanted to take care of myself. I have never wanted to be responsible for me. And I want to just tell you what used to go on in my head. The kind of person I was who came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never wanted to be responsible for me. I never wanted to be responsible for my feelings or actions. I come to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, and you tell me that I have to be responsible for my feelings, past and present, and that I have to be responsible for my actions, past and present. And I have never wanted to be responsible for myself. And I was the kind of person that in Texas we call it puffing up. And I would just sort of sit there, and it was just one of these absolute giant pouts. And I would sit there, and you were supposed to figure out what was going to make me happy. That was your job, to figure out what was going to make me happy. And if you couldn't figure it out, then you didn't love me. And I honestly felt that way. This was the kind, and if you didn't do those things, I felt rejected. Again, my friend Clancy says something that I just absolutely love. He says, the disease of alcoholism, I have to be treated special just to feel average. And if you don't treat me special, I feel rejected. And that's me. I always had to be treated special. And if you didn't, I was certain that you didn't love me, you were ignoring me, you were rejecting me. So I marry this man who is pretty much married to the Air Force first. It was made clear to him on his job. Everything was made clear. I mean, babies were being born. That was totally secondary. Whatever was going on was secondary to what, his country was calling or whatever. I feel pretty patriotic about those things today. I had the opportunity of being in Baltimore, Maryland last weekend, and my ex-husband and I had lived there. And I'm telling you, I just felt a ton of nostalgia and all of this stuff. And I'm really a patriot. I love it. It was just felt so good. And I had forgotten all those really warm, fuzzy feelings that to be involved in that kind of a lifestyle. And it really was nice. And I really did love it. But in the Air Force, I was introduced to alcohol. And, sometimes we talk about progressing to the morning drink. I never progressed to the morning drink. I started with the morning drink. We had these things called coffees, but they served more than coffee. They served Bloody Marys and screwdrivers. So it was Bloody Marys and screwdrivers in the morning, sherry before lunch, martinis before dinner, and Black Russians and Stingers after. And it never, ever occurred to me there was anything wrong with my drinking. And for a very long time, I thought I drank like everybody else. I've heard people in Alcoholics Anonymous talk about the disease of alcoholism, or their disease of alcoholism. And they say they took a drink, and then it went down, and it went out to the extremities, and everything just tingled, and they knew they were there, and they searched that feeling the rest of their lives. I don't really identify with that. There's a sign that's hanging in a clubhouse in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I can tell you I identify with that sign. And that sign says, the chains of alcoholism were too soft to be felt until they were too strong to be broken. And that's the way the disease was with me. I didn't even know I had it till I couldn't stop it. And I didn't even realize that I drank differently. And I'm still friends with a lot of people that we knew in the Air Force. And not one of those people are in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and furthermore, not one of them needs to be. So I didn't even know an alcoholic. I didn't even know what an alcoholic was until I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But as my alcoholism progressed, I knew that something was wrong with me. I just didn't know what it was. Along about 1962, we're stationed in a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine. And believe me, Eugene, Oregon has nothing on coal compared to Loring Air Force Base, Maine. And I have these two little kids, and it's 50 below zero, and there's no way I'm going to tell them to go outside to play. And I have absolutely not a clue how to be a parent. I have no tools in which to be a parent. And these kids are driving me crazy. And I'm having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes. So I go to an Air Force doctor, and he says, take these. And from 1962 until 1977, when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I drank alcohol, and I took Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nimutol. And I'm here to tell you, if you take those kind of drugs and you drink alcohol, you are not an active alcoholic. I call myself a couch potato alcoholic. I did my dying on my living room sofa. I just laid there and watched soap operas and listened to Joan Baez sing the blues. I have a son who's recovering in this program, and God willing, the creek don't rise. James will be 9 years sober on the 3rd of January, and I can't even believe it. It's just incredible. But I've had the opportunity to hear James share from a podium, And my drinking sounds real different when it comes from James. Because James talks about being a little boy. And he talks about his mom being passed out on the sofa. But he doesn't know that she's passed out. And his dad is gone. And he's walking back and forth in front of that sofa. And he is absolutely terrified. Because his dad is gone. And he's certain that his mother is dead. And that's the disease of alcoholism. And I believe with every fiber in my body that anybody who lives with a practicing alcoholic is affected by the disease of alcoholism. And I am so grateful to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about the family afterwards. And I think sometimes we don't pay enough attention to that. But I think it's real important that we make amends and restitution to our families. Because what we have done because of the disease of alcoholism has devastated the people that we have lived with. And, you know, I've been sober, gosh, it's about 15 and a half years now. And my children are still affected by the disease of alcoholism. And I'm really grateful for this program that I've been able to learn to walk a different walk. And I've been able to be a different person. Because, you know, it's not too late to still be a good mom. And I'm so grateful to this program that you've given me back that gift. I'm not going to tell a lot about a drunkalogue because, I slept through it. So there's not a lot to tell. I don't have a whole lot of racy stories. I had all my affairs sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I don't have a lot of racy stories. Prior to drinking, I just, you know, I slept through that. But I would like to tell you the things that brought me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. One night I was passed out on my sofa. If it was, a few minutes after 8, 10 minutes after 8, I was always passed out on my sofa. And my husband jerked me up and he sat me at the kitchen table and he said, "Polly, alcohol and pills are our problem. And if you just didn't drink and if you just didn't take these pills, everything would be okay." And he started throwing the booze down the drain and the pills down the garbage disposal. And I just sort of sat there in my comatose state. When he was done, I just went and passed out again. Now, I'd also taken to drinking things like NyQuil, cough medicine, vanilla extract, and Scope. Now, I had this keen alcoholic thinking. And my keen alcoholic thinking was that if you couldn't smell me, then you can tell I've been drinking. I don't know what I thought about behavior, but I somehow thought it all had to do with smell. And this was just, and I smoked about 2 packs of cigarettes a day at that time in my life. And, you know, if you carry a bottle of NyQuil around and you have a bad cough, people don't ask. I mean, they don't know that, you know, that that's 80 proof whiskey, and it's great stuff. So I went and passed out, and I came to about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was just too sick to drive to the 7-Eleven to get a bottle of NyQuil. And that night I found myself crawling around my garage floor, going through those plastic bags to just turn up those bottles to get one drop. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about the dilemma of the alcoholic, where to drink is to die and not to drink is to die. And I absolutely had to have a drink of alcohol or I would surely die. And that night my husband caught me downing a bottle of rubbing alcohol. I absolutely had to drink to live. Shortly thereafter, I had a car wreck, and I totaled an automobile, and that car wreck would bring me to treatment for the first time. And to make a very long story short, because I'm a blackout drinker, yikes, I did it. I'm entirely too uncoordinated to be doing this. I don't know what to do now. Is that did it? I'm sorry. I gotta watch all my. You have no idea the kind of dance I do behind this podium. A little nervous. I'll hold the thing up. So, anyway, I totaled this car, and I'm a blackout drinker. So, just to make a very long story short, I call from some phone booth, and I tell the police that my car has been stolen. And here comes the police, and I have no idea how much time has passed, and my husband's with them. And I get taken to the Irving Police Station, which is right outside of Dallas, Texas. And I get to see that look on the non-alcoholic's face. It just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. And this policeman looked at my husband with so much disgust, and he said, "Why don't you just take her home and sober her up?" And on the way home, he said, "Polly, there's a treatment center, and it's not far from my house, and I wish you would go." And that night, I entered treatment for the first time. Now, this was a county detox, and I'll guarantee you it was not silk sheet, you know, sobriety. And they took us to a lot of AA meetings, and it was a 7-day detox. And while I was in this detox, I really loved the meetings they took us to, and I loved the smiles on your faces, and I loved the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. But there was something down inside of me that said, "Polly, people like you just don't become alcoholic." And I love what my husband says. He's always talking about, you know, the arrogance of the alcoholic. Dr. Tebolt said that there are two characteristics present in every alcoholic, and that's defiant individuality and grandiosity. And he says an alcoholic can be laying in the gutter feeling superior to those looking down on him. And I just... And here I had been drinking rubbing alcohol, totaled an automobile that I have no recollection. I still to this day don't know what happened. And I am feeling like people like me don't become alcoholic. And while I was in this treatment center, I had what we call in Texas a jitter house romance. You know, where sick falls in love with sick and you walk off into happy destiny. Well, I had one of those. And we stayed sober for 58 days. And I was brought back into that treatment center more dead than alive. And I had been beaten up and numerous and sundry other things. And I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Because now I knew that the problem was sobriety. And you see, I have just defined the disease of alcoholism. Because you see, my problem is sobriety. Because without alcohol and drugs, I cannot live comfortably inside my own skin. I need the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in order to be able to live comfortably inside my own skin. And the more days that I spend in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the more aware I am of just how sick I really am. If I have been given any gift to be able to stay sober in this fellowship for 15 and a half years, it's that I know how sick I really am. And I used to not realize that. You know, between years about 5 and 10, you know, it's kind of, sometimes you feel like, oh, well, I've kind of got this thing nailed, and, you know, maybe I don't need as many meetings, maybe I don't need to do as much, and da-da-da-da. And those old ideas begin to start creeping in. And I'm so grateful today that I really know how sick I am. And by doing that and by knowing that today, I've really been able to cut myself a lot of slack. And for that, I'm grateful. I just don't take myself so serious anymore. I just don't have to do it right anymore. And I just don't have to be perfect anymore. Because this is a, you know, it's a journey. And every day I live sober in this program, I am given another, you know, another lesson and another way to learn, and it's just a journey. And I get a lot of opportunities to grow. And for that, I'm truly grateful, and I believe it's a gift. And that's the way I see sobriety today, and I never, ever understood that. I need the program of Alcoholics Anonymous so that I can live comfortably in my own skin without alcohol and drugs. Because normal for me is to be laying on my sofa, passed out, not standing up here talking to you ladies at this beautiful, beautiful retreat house. That's not normal for a woman like me. But thanks to this program, this is the gift I get to have. And I just, you know, the longer I'm here, the more precious it becomes. At any rate, I left that treatment center after the 7 days that I was there. And I got a bottle of scotch and I got a bottle of Valium and I checked into a motel because I knew that there was absolutely no way I could live sober. I don't believe that there is anybody in this room that doesn't have an Eskimo in your life. And an Eskimo is someone who leads us to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, it might be a spouse that says, you know, I just can't stand the way you're living. Maybe you're, you know, maybe you were a teenager that your parents just couldn't stand what you were doing and you had to leave home because they just couldn't stand what your drinking was doing to them. Or maybe you're here because your job said if you don't get your act together, you can't work here any longer. Or maybe you're here because you got a nudge from the judge. But whatever it is, somehow, some way, we're led to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had such a lady in my life. I had a lady who knew absolutely nothing about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And she said that something came over her this day. And see, today I know what that something was. That was God working in her life. That was God working in my life through her, because he was using her to help me. And when she drove up to, she looked around that day until she found my car parked outside this motel. And when she saw my car, she came up to the room, and I hadn't shut the door all the way. It was on a half latch, and she pushed it open, and she found me laying there. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival. And one of the things that that also means a lot to me is in 1977, April the 8th was Good Friday. And I've often heard Father Leo says there could never be a resurrection if there first hadn't been a crucifixion. And I know that each and every one of us has crucified ourselves, and the resurrection is to be in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And at any rate, needless to say, that didn't take, because I'm standing here tonight. But I need to tell you the miracle. I am a person who has been a very slow learner in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm one of these people who talk the talk. See, I am so addicted to approval that it was so necessary for you to approve of me, to love me. So I would go to meetings, and whatever you said you did or whatever you were doing, I'd say I did it. I did it too. And I may not feel that way at all. You know, I just talked the talk. I knew nothing about walking the walk, but I would talk the talk. And you would talk about your higher power and what God had done for you and how you felt about God and how you felt about your higher power. And I didn't feel these feelings. To tell you the honest truth, I was horrified of God as I understood him. And God as I understood him, all I knew was all my life was thou shalt not drink. And God didn't forgive sinners like me. That was my perception, and that's how I felt. And I was terrified of God, and I felt no warm, loving feelings about God. And so I'd go into meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you would talk about your higher power, so I'd talk that way too. And I had this fear going on inside of me. And this fear was that you were going to find out that I didn't have a higher power. But the worst thing of all was is that you had one and I'd never find one. And you know how we all go to the meeting after the meeting and we tell our, can you top this story? Well, see, I had all my affairs sober in AA. I had never had a DUI. I was never fired from a job. I came to this program married to the man I had been married to for 19 years. So I didn't have a lot of the stories that you had. So that I could top you when you started telling all your racy stories, I would say, well, I was pronounced dead on arrival, feeling nothing. Absolutely was not in touch with God's grace. And see, today I know what grace is, and I'm going to use Webster's definition of grace, and it's a gift unearned. I have done absolutely nothing to earn the gift of sobriety. Nothing. It has been a free gift. And I love what I hear in these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that God's gift to me is my sobriety. And what I do in this fellowship with this gift is my gift back to God. Because I believe, you know, when I was in those Baptist Sunday schools, they talked about, you know, what you reap, what you sow, so shall you reap. And I believe that about this program. I am going to get out of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in direct proportion to that what I put into it. And today I know that if I don't like what I'm getting out of this program, it has nothing to do with the people in AA. It has nothing to do with the meetings in AA. It has only to do with me. It has to do with what are you doing, Polly, when you go to a meeting? Have you ever gone to a meeting? And I loved what John Kennedy used to say, and do for your country. And I think that's the same thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when I go in there with that attitude, I mean, I come out with everything I want in this program. When I go in with the attitude of what can I contribute to that meeting, instead of going in there with the selfishness and self-centeredness that the book talks about, that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my disease. And when I can put that aside for just a few minutes, I began to have the opportunity to heal. Along about 5.5 years of sobriety, something wonderful happened to me. And I didn't know it for a really long time. But I go to a step study, and it's a big book step study. It's the step study done out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hadn't been going to this meeting for very long, and I started going to it about 8 or 9 months ago. And we were reading step five. And I had said in AA for a long time when I was talking behind podiums, I didn't know what happened. I just knew that at 5.5 years of sobriety, that a miracle had happened in my life, and I had found God as I understand Him. And today I'm here to tell you that, you know, the book talks about more will be revealed, so just stick around. If you've forgotten something, it'll come to you. And at 5 years and 4 months of sobriety, I did a second four-step. And I did that four-step exactly as it's laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my first four-step had been one of these autobiographies like from Hazleton, you know, I was born, and you write about 90 pages. And, I mean, it probably will make great publishing, but it did nothing to show me an inventory. And at 5 years and 4 months, I did another four-step exactly as it's laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I had a ledger sheet. You know, I've got something to work on. I've got resentments, and what's the cause, and what it affects, and what's my part in it. And it's a ledger sheet, and it's laid out there for me, and I can see what's going on in my life. And I know today, by doing that four-step, as it's laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we're going to talk about that tomorrow morning, and taking a fifth step, as it's laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm to tell God. I read that. I was instructed to read that to God first, and before I read it to my sponsor. And what had happened is, by doing that and doing 6 and 7 and having my list there, which is already there on your ledger sheet, and you see I burnt that first autobiography. Well, I just burnt my ledger sheet. You know, if I burn it, then I don't have my resentments and I don't have my character defects. And I didn't burn this one. And what I had done, I realized, is that I had taken a set of actions that were necessary to produce a spiritual awakening. And the book promises me that. The book says before we are halfway through, these miracles, these promises are going to start to come true. And they did. And I had forgotten that what I had done was that fourth step. I took a set of actions contrary to the way I feel. And that's what I was taught when I came to this program. You know, if I did the things I felt like doing, I would have never done anything. And I would not be able to enjoy the life that I have today. And I just want to say, if you've been sitting in these rooms for a long time and you haven't got that feeling that people talk about, just don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. And maybe it's time you took a new look at the steps. Maybe it's time that you might try what I did. And I didn't know that that was the answer, but it was the answer for me. And I know that that set of actions were what was necessary to produce a spiritual awakening. And that feeling that came over me that day is with me most of the time. And that feeling is just no matter what, everything's going to be okay. I entered a treatment center in Dallas, Texas. And I was court committed to that treatment center. And, you know, people who say people like me don't become alcoholics, I was court committed to that treatment center. My papers read that I was a detriment to myself and others. The state of Texas 15.5 years ago did not take kindly to people who try to kill themselves. So they kind of take matters into their own hands when you do things like that. And I'm so grateful because I entered that treatment center on April the 11th of 1977. And I am so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, a loving God, and the 12 steps that I haven't had to have a drink since. Now, I'm not here to tell you that I've never felt like drinking, that's never crossed my mind, that I've never wished that Alcoholics Anonymous would just go take a flying you-know-what. Because I'm like everybody else. I get up and I have a bad attitude. And I know today that the only difference between me having a good day and a bad day lies in my attitude. Because people, places, and things are just who they are, people, places, and things. When I came to this program, I was a victim. I was a victim of the U.S. Air Force. I was a victim because I was an only child. I was a victim because of the Baptist church. I was a victim because I was born a woman. I thought men had it better. I was just a victim. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, most of our problems are of our own making. Thank God. Because if my problems are of anybody else's making, I'm screwed. But as long as they're of my making, you know, I got a shot. And I don't know if there's any new people. Are there any new people like in the first 6 months or so of sobriety? Are there any new? Oh, great. Wonderful. Wow, my hat is off to you if I had one on, because what a treat, you know, to come with this amount of sobriety. That's wonderful. But I don't want to scare you guys off, but I'm here to tell you that you don't have to change much, just everything. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says I've got to get rid of all my old ideas. And as my AA sponsor told me, Polly, what is it about the word all you don't understand? You know? All my old ideas are the results are nil. So I know today that I just had to get a brand new way of thinking, because the way I thought had nothing to do. I mean, it was the thing that was keeping me in bondage, was the way I thought. Because you see, what I know about me today is it wasn't necessarily what people did to me and what people said to me. It was my reaction to what people did to me and what people said to me. And I know that for me. And I know that there are people who come into these rooms that have terrible things that happen to them. And I know that those things take, you know, a lot of special help. And I certainly hope that you get whatever it is you need when you have those kind of problems. But I'm just talking about, for me, those were not the things that happened to me. What happened to me was, I just truly believe that I was spoiled rotten and just loved too much. I mean, I know that if I'd have asked my daddy to get me that big yellow moon out there, he would have found a way to do it. And I just didn't have any discipline. I had to come into these rooms and learn how to have discipline and learn how to grow up. And I love what I've heard in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in my women's meeting. And we talk about going through puberty and menopause all at the same time. And that's... And that's where I am. Here I am. I'm almost, you know, 15 and a half years old. Can you remember? I mean, God. And sometimes I go through those internal struggles, just like when I was a teenager. And here I am at 52 years old. And believe me, I didn't come here without my estrogen. So, you know, it's like, it's this, you know, what, it's like, oh my God, what's fair about all this? But then we hear it's, you know, who said it had to be fair? I'm just grateful that, you know, that I know today, because I almost died and missed the whole thing. And I'm really grateful for the things that I know today. And I got active in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I believe in action. And I believe that the legacy of our program is like a three-legged stool. And, you know, a three-legged stool can hold a 50-pound weight or a 500-pound weight, not a 50-pound weight, as much as you want to put on it. But take one leg off, and the stool falls over. And I think that's our legacy. I think the bottom of the triangle is recovery, and that's the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think it is absolutely imperative that we work the steps. And in case you're new, the program is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. The fellowship, which is unity, is what we're doing right here. This is the unity, the fellowship. We're gathering up together. And then the service. And everybody who's been involved in this retreat this weekend has been of service. And I know that it takes all three in order to enjoy the kind of sobriety to make me happy, joyous, and free. And Bill said, we absolutely insist on being happy. And you know what Sister B says? It's in the book. The recipe is in the book. And if I don't follow the recipe, then I don't get the results. And I'm really grateful that I know that. When I was 3 years sober, I married my best friend. And Dave is my greatest gift to the program that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. And when I came to this program, I was married. And my husband had congestive heart failure. He had been retired from the military, 100% disabled. And I had a lot of arrogance because I just knew if this man didn't have me to take care of him, he would surely die. And you know how people in Alcoholics Anonymous get right in front of your face and they tell you the truth whether you want to hear it or not? And people would get in my face and they'd say, Polly, your husband is not dying of congestive heart failure. You are. Why don't you just drop the rock? So at 3 years of sobriety, we divorced. And I want to just tell you how important I am in this man's life. 6 months later, he remarried a much younger woman, and he's never been healthier or happier since. And I found out he had a higher power, and it wasn't me. And I've done that a lot in this program. I found out that there's a higher power, and it's not me. In 3.5 years of sobriety, I married my best friend. And Dave and I had been friends since I was 6 months sober, and Dave is 1.5 years sober. And we even say to each other that if we'd have known we were going to get married, we wouldn't have told each other the things we told each other. And now, we're two drunks working together, okay? And I'm real grateful for the examples that I have seen in this program, because there's one thing that I'm really clear about, and I've seen it a lot, is two alcoholics married together. You know, the track record in this fellowship is not very good. And I want to stay married to this man. I married him, and I want to be married to him for the rest of my life. But I don't know how to do anything for the rest of my life. And Dave and I sure didn't know anything about marriage. We both knew how to take a hostage, but neither one of us knew how to have a marriage. And we've learned a lot. And we've done a lot of things in this fellowship. And they all haven't been going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Dave and I have done some therapy. We've done some individual therapy. We've done some group therapy. We've gone on couples retreats. Because learning how to communicate and to take a risk and willing to be intimate with another human being is something I did not have a clue about, and neither did Dave. And we wanted our marriage so bad that we were willing to go to any lengths, and that's what we've done. I'm going to share a lot of those things with you this weekend that we've done, because I think it was imperative for us. And I hear a lot of people, you know, they come in here and they say AA is, you know, everything is in AA. Well, you know, I know that Alcoholics Anonymous has the spiritual answer for me. But, you know, if I have cancer, please take me to the doctor. And I just believe if I need some help with some other things, that there are help available to me. And the Big Book tells me that this help is available for me, and to avail myself of the help. And we did, and I'm so grateful that Dave and I were willing to take a risk and go do that, because we know each other today, and we've done a lot of neat things and growing together as a couple. And I'd love to tell you that it's wonderful all the time and that I am just passionately in love with Dave every minute of the day, but that's not true, because I'm an alcoholic. And I can just be certain on some days that everything is wrong that is wrong with me is Dave's fault. And if it just wasn't for him, my life would be perfect. And I know that then I have to get back to looking at me. Because I know today that the problem with me is me. And I'm so grateful today that I know that. And I didn't know it before I came to this program, that I am responsible for my actions. One of the things that I believe is that love is a healer. And wherever love is present, it will heal. And I had a lot of icky character defects to surface in this marriage. The worst of being was jealousy. Now, I'm here to tell you that I sponsor the most gorgeous women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're all younger than me, and worst of all, they're all thinner than me. And Dave adores them, and they adore Dave. In fact, I want to tell you guys something. I sponsor this woman who is drop-dead gorgeous, and she is right now in my husband's Toyota truck driving to Colorado to go canoeing on the Freudian slip on the Colorado River. And you know, today that's okay. Today that's okay. And that didn't used to be okay. Because I had so many insecurities within me that I was so jealous. And today I know that that's what those were insecurities. And today that's my barometer. When I feel those icky feelings, you know, those icky feelings that just eat you absolutely to death, I know that the only relationship that I need to pay any attention to is my relationship with God. Because that is the only relationship that's in any trouble. Because I cannot make anybody love me, and I cannot make anybody care for me. And I know today the best way that I can love Dave is to let Dave go and be the very best Dave that he can be. And that's what Dave has done for me. I mean, he is my cheerleader. He is my cheerleader. And he just allows me to go be the very best Polly you can be. And when we come together, we bring together the very best of both of us. And it was really hard to let go because, you see, I knew how to hang on. And if you didn't pay attention to me, you know, then something was wrong with me and you didn't love me. And today I know that that's just my insecurities. And that when I let Dave go, be the very best Dave he can be. You see, I don't want a canoe. That doesn't sound like fun to me. I want to come here. I don't want to climb rocks. Dave likes to climb rocks. I have fingernails and I don't want to skin my knees. Those are not things I want to do. I don't want to throw a 40-pound pack on my back and walk around on the high Sierras and sleep out in the open and have bears out there. I don't want to do that. I want to stay in this nice warm room up here and watch the trees. That's what I want to do. And what I've learned is that you can let each other go and go be the very best that you can be. And it's the very best gift I have ever had. And I'm so grateful that I have been able to learn. And we talk about being, you know, honest, open-minded, and willing. And I'm so grateful that I was willing to be open-minded and to go take a look at some of the things that needed healing so that I could have a relationship. I want to talk about my two sons, and I need to do that really quick. I'm talking too long. When I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I realized that that my children were traumatized by the disease of alcoholism. And the hardest thing that I have had to face about me is that I had to stand up and say, Polly, you are a child abuser. Because what I had done to my children because of a disease called alcoholism had absolutely devastated my children. And my children are a product of neglect. I was not a parent that beat my children physically, but what I did is I just didn't pay any attention to them. So I sent a message to my children that you are of no value, and my children grew up thinking they were of no value. And today, the best gift I found that I can give them is to validate them when they say, you know, Mom, you really didn't pay any attention to and you acted like you didn't want us. And to say, well, you're right. That is how I felt. And to make so that they don't think they're crazy. To just say, yes, the way you feel is the truth. And I'm so grateful that you have given me the courage to be able to do that. Because the relationship I have with my sons today is the best that I could ever have imagined it could be. My sons have had a lot of trouble. My oldest son just hated himself so badly, and he was someone who was depressed. He had chronic depressions, and I understood that because I am a person that was depressed until I was 8 years sober in this program. I had very, very deep depressions, and I know today that the only difference between that and today is my relationship with God. I know the more that I believe that God is there for me, the less afraid that I am and the less angry I am. And it's been a lot of work to get through that. And it's taken a lot of inventory and a lot of writing. And I'm really grateful for that. Well, my son suffered that, and he would mutilate himself. And I knew what that was like because I knew what it was like to do that too, because I would want to hurt myself physically so I didn't have to feel emotionally. And Russ tried to kill himself 6 times. And there were times that I just did not believe that I could stand that. There was no way that I could stand it. And my girlfriend Julie that's sitting here has been through a lot of those times with me when I just didn't know if I could bear it. And, you know, it was people in this program that just told me, you know, to let go, Polly. And, you know, to just be the very best you can be in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was speaking out of state just like I get to do tonight. And this was, it was 4 years ago in October and just last month. And my daughter-in-law called me on the phone, and my son had put a pair of scissors in his stomach. He was in the hospital one more time. And I just knew that God was big enough to get me sober, but he just wasn't big enough to take care of us. And this wonderful man came up to me, and you know, I truly believe when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And this man came up to me, and he says, Polly, you and I need to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we need to read the chapter to the agnostic. And you need to know that God either is or he isn't, and he is either all things or he's nothing. And that Russ is not your kid, he's God's kid. And what God does with his kids is none of your business. And with this man's help, I was able to release my son. And I'm here to report to you 4 years later that my son has not tried to kill himself and that he is a member of our Al-Anon Fellowship. And I am so grateful for that. When I was 6.5 years sober, my youngest son called me on the phone. And he said, Mom, I want what you have. And 6.5 years before, he did not want what I had. 6.5 years before, I was supposed to attend a function at his school. And he says, don't you dare show up at my school because I am ashamed of you. And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. And you know, I wanted so desperately to help these kids. And I want to share with you what was told to me. Because I knew that my son was a full-blown drug addict and alcoholic. I knew that. He ran the beaches of Venice. And I mean, there's lots of bad stuff going on down there. And it was in the rooms and the women in Alcoholics Anonymous who told me, Polly, you may be the only big book James ever reads. And if you think tonight that you're sitting in this room and you don't make a difference, you do. Because the minute you walk outside these rooms and the rest of the world sees you, you're the big book they cannot read. And every person who has been given the gift of sobriety makes a difference. And you know, some people in this room may be what you don't want. But everybody is an example of this program. And everybody makes a difference. And today I know just for me to show up on Monday night and sit in the seat that I occupy on the second row at Monday night Seal Beach Speakers meeting is what I need to do. And that makes a difference. I know to suit up and show up and be a member of this fellowship makes a difference. And that it is a 12-step call every time I do it. I know that it makes a difference. And James is a member of this fellowship, and I'm here to tell you that he is an active member of the North Shore Al-Anon Group in Evanston, Illinois. And it's a miracle. And we've been able to celebrate sobriety a lot. We were there at Bill W.'s big family reunion in Seattle, and he married a beautiful lady in this fellowship, and she's also a recovering alcoholic. And in April a year ago, we all gathered up in Evanston, Illinois, and we had a wedding. And James had seen AA weddings in Southern California, and he wanted an AA wedding. And we got this Marion judge down there who does it, and he wanted that. So they found someone in the program who was a minister, and he married them. And we all went up there and we were standing there. And what you do at an AA wedding is you wish everybody well. It's like having a big AA meeting and you wish the couple well and you say nice things about them. And I was just standing there with just, you know, goosebumps running all over me thinking, you know, the only reason that I'm standing here today and the only reason that this beautiful day is taking place is because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I almost died and missed the whole thing. I have been given so many gifts as a result of this fellowship. And I'm going to tell you another great, big, fantastic, wonderful gift. James and Kelly, about a month ago, called Dave and I and said, guess what? We're going to have a sober baby. And I just know I'm going to be the best grandmother ever. And I've already told Dave I just have to quit my job and move to Chicago. I mean, they need me there to take care of that baby. And it's the gifts. You know, if you'd have told me to make a list of all the things I'd have wanted in sobriety, I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me the things that He's given me. A husband like Dave, friends like you. I'd have never known to ask God to let me come to this retreat. I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me these kind of gifts. The friends that I have, the job that I have, and I never had the nerve. But then the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to us, we'd have settled for so much less. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to my own devices, I'll self-destruct. The very best I could do for me is to get me pronounced dead on arrival. But thanks to this program, you have breathed life into me. And tonight I'm here to tell you, I am the woman I always have wanted to be. All my life, I have never, ever been enough. I have never, ever felt like I'm enough. And thanks to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I am enough. I am so grateful that I am enough and that you have given me these gifts. Today I am a wife who has loved my husband for 12 years, and I have been faithful and loyal, and I never could do that. I suit up and show up for my job, and I give my employer 100%, and I never could do that. The gift that you have given me that I treasure the most is tonight I am the mom I always wanted to be. And my son, Russ, we didn't have any relationship for 15 years, well, probably about 14 and a half. Last November, he'd been living in New Jersey, and I'd see him maybe twice a year and talk to him on the phone occasionally. And he called me on the phone, and he said, Mom, what would you think if I told you we were moving to Southern California? And you know, I've had the opportunity to sit in a therapy office and listen to my son talk about what it was like to be a little boy. And I've been able to listen. And you know, he says, like, Mom, it's not your fault, but this is the way I felt. And you know, I never could listen. And I'm so grateful today that I've been given the opportunity to listen. And Russ was having dinner the other night with one of the girls that I sponsor. And Deborah said to Russ, you know, Russ, I wish I had a mom just like you. And Russ said, yeah. He says, my mom is the greatest mom in all the world. And I'm so grateful to this program because it's because of this program that I have that gift. And I'm so grateful tonight, because tonight I am the mom I always wanted to be. And best of all, I am the mom my sons always wanted me to be. When I went into treatment, one of the counselors used to start every day with a prayer, and I end my AA talks with it. I sought my God I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. I sought my brother, and I found all three. Thanks. Good morning.
Morning.
How's everybody? Everybody sleep good? All right. How about we just start the session with a serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Good morning. The first thing I'd like to start off with this morning is Emotional Sobriety, the Next Frontier. And this is Bill W.'s last letter to the grapevine. And I'd like to just, you know, us read it together. And please feel free to ask any questions and discuss anything that you have to discuss. And I'm going to start with this morning. It's 9 o'clock in the morning, and it's a good way to get real controversial. So I just thought we'd start with this. Because from this, I want to spend a little bit of time on this and see what see what your feelings are. And then I want to go into some intense work with the steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And if we don't have enough time in this hour and a half, then we'll carry over to the one this afternoon. But as I said last night, I have three segments I want to deal with. I would like to deal with this letter, the steps, and another little work paper that I have on emotional sobriety, and then do some writing later on. And we'll talk about the writing, and then we'll take it off the tape, do we have like a boom box or something like that you can play a tape? Is that available? So, well, I'll check on that later. It certainly looks like maybe with Terry here, we certainly should have some capabilities to play a tape. If not, we just won't be able to do that. Okay, does everybody have if you don't have a copy of this letter, Julie will pass one out to you. So if you don't have a copy, just let Julie know and she'll pass it. Some other people are coming in. Julia, no. I keep forgetting. Julia, I've known Julie as a nickname and I've got to stop doing that. Sorry, sweetheart. Okay, let's just start to read and I'll make some comments. And if you have any comments, this is a workshop, so don't be shy. And the reason I'm going to kind of stand behind the podium here is so that Terry can tape. But if you've got any questions, just ask. I'll repeat it, and then we'll talk about it so that it gets on the tape. But this is so that you'll have this later on, the tape of what went on at your retreat. Okay, let's just start with the first paragraph. I think that many oldsters have put our AA booze cure to severe but successful test, still find they often lack emotional sobriety. Perhaps they will be the spearhead for the next major development in AA, the development of much more maturity and balance, which is to say humility, in our relationships with others, with our fellows, and with God. And one of the things that I have come to believe is that, I said this last night when I was giving an AA talk, is that there are a lot of buzzwords around around the recovery field that aren't, recovery that's not Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is just my feeling, but being the people that I am as an alcoholic, I'm very opinionated, I'm definitely very judgmental. So what I do is I make a lot of comments about a lot of different people. And I've heard a lot of people have a lot of problems with the adult children movement, that they're in there just bashing parents. And maybe a lot of that's true, but, I've talked to some people when Al-Anon got started, and I think Al-Anon was pretty much an alcoholic bashing session before there was any maturity in the fellowship. And I think what happens a lot of times is I'm not willing to live and let live and let people find a way to recover. And I hope if I've learned anything in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I have learned to keep my mouth shut when people are trying to find a way to recover, because everybody is not AA and everybody is not Al-Anon. And what is so beautiful about our 12 steps is it doesn't matter what your problem is. Those 12 steps can find a way to become spiritually fit so that you can live no matter what the problem is.